as we bring in Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 32 Thoughts. Bet you didn't think you were going to hear from me this morning, Elliot.
Well, I got a text about it about 5 minutes ago, Matt, and there's no question that this is an act of sabotage. Like, I don't care what anybody says. You did this. It's going to be like a long drama. At the beginning, they never suspect the person who's actually guilty. And at the end, we find out that this suspect had done some things, wired some things, put programs in place to make sure that he or she was going to try to come out on top. I give you credit. You fooled them to the absolute last second, and you actually got away with it by getting on the air. Good work, Marchese. Very impressive.
It was a really long drive from Beaton to Stouffville this morning to go, you know, sabotage Jeff's equipment. I'm not going to lie. It was fun, but I can't say. Elliot, I can honestly say that this is a real low bar for you today.
Are you kidding? I don't even think I can crawl underneath it. Usually I can crawl underneath anything.
Yeah, well,
you know what? Beaton, you're Jim Rutherford's favorite radio host now. He's from Beaton too.
I know. Okay, so funny story about that. I was driving through Schaumburg, Ontario, which is a little town just south of Beaton, Tottenham, Alliston, wherever, just west of Newmarket. And I was at a gas station, and I pull up, and I'm with my wife, and I pull behind this car, and I see Pittsburgh license plate, and I say, or Pennsylvania license plate. I say, no way, there's no chance. So sure enough, Jim Rutherford gets out of the car, and I had spoken with Jim over the phone plenty of times, never actually met him in person, introduced myself, and he's probably like, what is this maniac doing coming to introduce himself at a gas station? He was actually going to visit his mother in Beaton, made the trek from Pennsylvania. So yeah, a little tie-in with Beaton, Ontario, which gets way too many mentions on this program, or on the station at least. Okay,
well, first of all, there's a couple of things about this story. Number one is you probably look disgusting. So, you know, he's probably looking at this horrible looking human being coming up to him and is immediately concerned. But number two, did he pay for your gas? Like, that would be the best story.
He didn't. Because the common misconception
is selfish.
The common misconception is that if you work in radio, everybody thinks you have a lot of money. And last check of my bank account, you do not. So
no, I have to say that's quite the reverse from the people I know who work in it.
Yeah. So this is the one thing that we will actually agree on today. Okay. Pat Verbeek, opening press conference yesterday. I thought there were some interesting tidbits. Let's start right away with Henry Samueli's comments about him working with Steve Yzerman was a critical factor. So I guess the question I'm asking is, Does Yzerman have that kind of gravitas around the league in that, you know, if you work for Steve Yzerman, you know, you're in you're in really good shape here to get a job as you go forward?
It's a great question. And Merrick and I actually had a bit of this conversation today on the podcast. And first of all, the short answer to your question is yes, Yzerman has that gravitas. And it's not just because of everything he accomplished on the ice. When he took over, when he moved into scouting and being an NHL executive, first in Detroit, later in Tampa, and now back in Detroit, the thing about Yzerman is he works. You know, I think that this generation of player, they retire potentially, especially a guy like Yzerman, with a lot of money. You don't have to do anything. You could sit at home for the rest of your life and be with your kids and be a dad, and nobody would have any problem with that. And it's an easier life. Instead, he went back into the business, and you know, the thing about him, Matt, is that he didn't go in the business and just cut corners and show up 25% of the time. He went out and he did the work. He went to the dingy arenas. He went on the long scouting trips. You know, he said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this right. And he's like that as a boss now too. He's fair from what I understand, but he's also very demanding. He has a lot of expectation on himself. So therefore he has expectation on others. And, you know, one of the things, you know, we were talking about, Matt, is that, you know, in football, everybody tries to hire the Bill Belichick disciples, right? But how many of them have worked? How many of them have, you know, turned out to be half as good as Bill Belichick is? And sometimes you can be, yeah, you could say, okay, I'm getting Bill Belichick light, but you might not be. You know, obviously, why did Belichick win a lot? A, he's a great coach, but B, had the greatest player ever. And I don't care how great a coach you are, you're not winning unless you have good players. And he had the best. But Belichick's pretty freaking smart. So the thing is, it doesn't guarantee you anything. What I think that Iserman's shown is you look at the results. He took over Tampa. They've been a contender for years. He left and they won. And, you know, he's not the reason they won, but he put a lot of that foundation there. And now in Detroit, you look what's happening there and you see that they're getting better and they've found some good players. They're still a long way away, but you see the improvement. And I think that, you know, the thing with Iserman is because he's demanding and because his programs have success, he's been pushing Pat Verbeek for years. It was the right time. And I think that because Verbeek also has the reputation, Verbeek, I think, should be in the Hall of Fame. He's not. I think he should be. But, you know, he's an elite level player who works now that he's retired and has worked for a long time. And I think that has everything to do with it.
So that brings us to Pat Verbeek and the job that he's going to do with the Anaheim Ducks. And the one thing that stood out, I think, not only for me, but for everybody, was when he said this team is in the middle of a rebuild. They're not quite a contender yet. So does that give us kind of an indication of, you know, the route that this team is going to take ahead of the deadline? And I'm going to pass this now on to Jeff Merrick, who's on the line, but you can take that question and I will leave you to it.
Are you kidding? You're going to cut his lines again. He's going to start to open his mouth and you're going to cut his lines again.
I thought that was the Wally Pitt moment for me. That was it. And the Maddie was going to be Lou Gehrig and just take the ball and run with it here for each.
I got to say, that was the best 13 minutes of the Jeff Merrick show since it started.
There's a lot of people bobbleheading that as well, saying, yeah, you're right. Leave the young guy on. What did I miss? Well, I heard you say Pat Verbeek should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, we talked about Verbeek a little bit, but the last thing that Matt asked before you rudely shoved him off the cliff was that, you know, what do I think the process is going to be now that he's taken over? And, you know, first of all, I expect we're not going to hear a lot about it. Iserman's a vault and Verbeek tries to be similar, so he's going to try to keep information very tight. You know, like if you watched the media conference yesterday, and I know you were on air, it's pretty clear to me he thinks that the Ducks are heading in the right direction. They've already bottomed out. You know, I said this yesterday with you, and I'll say it again. I think all decisions go from Lindholm. You know, that's the decision that has to be made first. And once they get there, you know, we'll see. I want to see what happens with that before I decide on anything else.
You see, I look at the Lindholm situation, Friedge, and I say, well, as much as, you know, Pat Verbeek may be the general manager, as much as, you know, the Samuelis may be the owners, the person that holds cards here, is Hampus Lindholm himself. And if he wants to go somewhere else, if he wants to test the marketplace, see what's out there, we all know what defensemen are commanding on the open market right now. We know what happened last summer. Where defensemen got paid, thank you very much, and the effects of which we're still seeing in places like Dallas with the John Klingberg impasse with the Dallas Stars. If he wants to go somewhere else, there's really nothing Pat Verbeek can do about it. The question to me then becomes, okay, if there is no Hampus Lindholm in Anaheim, what does that mean for their timeline? And who else goes at the same time? Like, it was one thing to have... You know, we're going to let go of Rickard Rakell. We're going to let go of Josh Manson. I'm with you. I think Lindholm is the huge decision here because there's no obvious replacement for him. That player doesn't exist in the organization, and no one's letting someone like Hampus Lindholm go. But if you do let Hampus Lindholm go, do you say, okay, now we're backing up the process here? You know, we've gone this far in this rebuild, and a lot of that has been on the back of players like Hampus Lindholm. If he goes, do we need to say, hang on a second here, we need to reset our timeline a little bit?
You might. I think the other thing that's really interesting about all this, Jeff, is that, you know, Anaheim's getting a lot of positive reaction from hiring Verbeek. Yep. And, you know, it's interesting to see you know, like the Verbeek played like he's no shrinking violet, man. He played a mean, mean game.
Almost 3,000, 2,900 penalty minutes for each.
I know, but they were all like, they were all hooking. They were.
I'm sure. Yeah. All trips.
I think it's a big challenge to walk into a situation, get some positive coverage out of it. And most of what I saw, I mean, people can tell me if I'm missing anything. And then 7 weeks later, you're jettisoning, you know, one of your most important players. I think Lindholm is in, well, he's got more control, right? Because he can say yes or no.
Yeah.
So he's in the more advantageous situation. I just, Anaheim's they're having a good season. I don't know that they're going to make the playoffs, but they've really improved. Gibson's having a phenomenal year. Is it hard? Well, it is hard. But is it hard to say no to Lindholm right now? And you know that some of these decisions, they get, there's the analytical decision, there's the eye test decision, and then there's the PR business decision.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think people forget how big those PR business decisions are, especially coming out of COVID.
I want to add one more in the people of interest category here, because you're right. There's the analytics decision, the eyeball decision, the emotional PR decision. Is there also, because you mentioned John Gibson a second ago, is there also the teammate decision that if you let Hampus Lindholm go, it affects, and John Gibson seems like the obvious one here, it affects your teammates. It affects the rest of the team. So you may look at it and say, we don't want to go full term on Hampus Lindholm, but to keep him and keep everybody happy here and moving in the right direction, we just might need to for fear of losing someone else. Does that resonate?
I think the thing is, I think it does. The key thing is, it depends on what your plan is, right? If you do lose him, you've got to be able to articulate a good plan.
I think their plan is we're going to follow the Zegras, McTavish, Drysdale timeline, but we're also going to keep as many quality players around them as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And people that are on the same program. And listen, if you're a team that has Jamie Drysdale and they're like, this is the thing. As much as you may be on the Drysdale, Zegras, McTavish timeline, mm-hmm. you have Jamie Drysdale. What's going to help him more than having Hampus Lindholm in that room and on the ice with him? That's an investment in Jamie Drysdale.
I agree with that. You're also looking at, you mentioned though, like what's Zegras's next deal going to look like?
We think it's going to be a whopper.
And then, but you should have plenty of room. What's Drysdale's next deal going to look like? I think, there's a great Calder race this year. I think he's getting forgotten. He's a good player. Now, you have plenty of room to deal with this, and it's still 2 years away. But, if you're thinking of committing anywhere in 5 to 8 years on Lindholm, something you got to keep in mind. It's fascinating. And I think the thing about Verbeek is he said he still has time.
Yep. Did you guys mention anything about Chicago?
We did not today. No, we did not today.
A couple of things that I'm curious about here. How the NHL, and we're all waiting for this NHL press conference before All-Star Skills with Gary Bettman and Bill Daly. Curious what they say about a couple of things. Chicago Blackhawks, the Rocky Wirtz outburst, and the situation with the Arizona Coyotes and ASU. But do we know what the Hawks' next move might be? Like, I'm very curious about the shockwaves and what gets changed, in the couple of days now since Rocky Wirtz had his outburst. And for a lot of people, myself included, I don't care how many apologies that Rocky Wirtz sends out from the Chicago. We all saw that. The gravity of that cannot be underscored. It doesn't matter. Now it's how do you deal with it? Does that affect the GM search?
I would suspect yes, but I think it's too early to say. Kyle Davidson had his interview this week. I think it was Tuesday, but I don't know that for sure. You know, and now there are external candidates too. They're beginning the process of asking for permission and going down the road. And, you know, one of the things I do believe is that, you know, and Danny Wirtz has said it's GM only. And one of the reasons I believe that's the case is I think like a lot of teams right now, there is cost cutting going on because of coming out of COVID and, you know, the Blackhawks have really been hit hard by, you know, by everything that's happened to them this year, including their play on the ice. And I just think that one of the things I was hearing last night and again this morning is that did this incident show that you need an experienced person, not necessarily experienced in terms of being a GM, but just being around a long time to manage this? Is this like, for example, like I think Danny Wirtz really likes Kyle Davidson a lot. And I think he has given really significant thought to making him the general manager. And if he really believes that Kyle Davidson is the best person for the job, well then give him the job. But I think now you're going to have to insulate him a lot more than maybe you thought. And you know, I just think that there's going to be a push from the league to say, this was very damaging for us and we're not sure. And I don't even think it's just the league saying it. I think that they might be told that by some of the people they've hired to, or just other people around. This is not the time. Like, I do think that we have to get younger and fresher, and I think Vancouver's really a team that started to move to that. But I wonder if they're going to look at this and say, this is not the right time for that in Chicago, simply because of what happened there the other night. And I do know that's a question that's being asked. Like, you know, like Ed Olczyk, for example, was put on the – he's not going to be interviewed. He was put on the search team. And, you know, like some people were saying to me that – you know, he's very popular in the city. Again, they're going to have to take a long look at this because there was so much damage done the other night.
The one person that I'm curious about through all of this is someone we had on our podcast a few months ago, and that's Mike Ford. Now, people listening to this may not know Mike Ford, but his group, Sportsology, who've done a lot of work specifically in the NBA, I know he doesn't like to be considered a headhunter, but he works with teams to help, you know, place executives in certain positions. So he's advising the Chicago Blackhawks on this one. He's very experienced in this, whether it's in, you know, football in the UK, whether it's the NBA, where he's really helped establish his relationship. I wonder how much the Blackhawks are relying on his input here for a couple of things, finding the next manager and also doing damage control through all of this. And that's why I ask you, did the Rocky Wirtz situation affect the GM search? Because I'm guessing that those two issues are now linked, at least in Mike Ford's mind, that he's going to try to do a couple of things here. Minimize the damage of what happened on Wednesday and also put someone in place to make sure those shockwaves stop. If we know anything about Mike Ford, how influential? Because I know, listen, Host is there, Sharp is there, Olczyk's there. I can't help but thinking, though, the one person that, you know, that Danny Wirtz, Jamie Faulkner would be relying on here is probably Mike Ford, and his name isn't anywhere right now.
Well, I just think that we all know he's in the background, right? Like, he's been hired by them.
But this is his moment, though, isn't it? This is what he does.
This is what he does, but it's also been complicated, right? And the thing is that it's going to be a while, it looks like. It's going to be a while before the Blackhawks are very good. So you can't – like, one of the ways that you can create goodwill is by having a successful team, right? And it looks like that's going to be a longer project. So you can't – that's not something you can really depend on right now. Like, they go out that night and they get whacked by Minnesota. It's not something you can depend on right now is to make your fans feel better by having a good team. So the only way you can make your fans feel better right now is by saying, okay, we're going to fix this. And now you've already had one press conference where you're supposed to fix it, and unfortunately it got worse. So that becomes even more important than the hockey hire.
A couple of things before we wrap up, and Pete Lannis is going to be joining me here in a couple of moments from Elevate 02. Teams coming out of the All-Star break here now, and you know, I would imagine, Elliot, the teams now with a few dark days around the league outside of the All-Star skills and the game itself would kind of be taking stock. Here we are halfway through the season. Who are we? Where are we going? Do we have what we need? Did we overestimate? Did we underestimate, etc.? And to me, one of the most interesting teams right now who have some decisions in front of them are the Winnipeg Jets.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder about a player like Andrew Kopp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the Winnipeg Jets, you know, look at this season and say, we're not there. We're not where we thought we would be. We overestimated, you know, how good we are. Maybe I was going around saying how good the Winnipeg Jets are going to be, and we've heard people say, you know, cup contenders, etc. You know, do we start to hear the name, you know, Andrew Kopp whispered around? You know, like after this All-Star weekend, it's all going to be about the trade deadline and who's available, from, you know, Giroux to Kessel to, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury to Hurdle to Max Domi, etc. I just wonder about Winnipeg and whether we start hearing Andrew Kopp's name.
Well, I think we will. You know, this year, you know, they couldn't make a deal this year. So they signed a one-year deal, and everybody knew what this was going to be. And first of all, he's a real good player who's actually played pretty well for them. He's played wing, he's played center. He can do a lot of things. And I look at that and I said, it was basically, if this year went well for Winnipeg, they go for it, Kopp stays, and then he walks. If it doesn't go well for Winnipeg, Kopp gets dealt at the deadline. Look, the math isn't good for them. They've got games to make up, but the math isn't good for them. I think Kopp's going to be a very valuable piece should that time come.
You know, there are four teams that have an extended break here. Like, there's, you know, Anaheim, I think, only has one game in the next week, but there are teams that have no games.
Yeah, Rangers.
Rangers, Florida Panthers, Los Angeles Kings, San Jose Sharks.
Yeah.
You know, the two specifically of interest, the Rangers and the Florida Panthers. San Jose has their own issues when we think of our Hurdle specifically. The Los Angeles Kings, they made some moves in the offseason. They're a better team than many thought. But I'm curious about the Rangers and the Florida Panthers. What did they do with this extended break here as they sort of take stock of you know, what's under the hood?
I think that the Panthers are all in. They're going to win the Stanley Cup, and they should. You know, I think they're going to go after the best defenseman that they can find, whether it's Chychrun or a rental, like a Giordano or something like that. I think they're all in, and they should be. Mm-hmm. I think the Rangers, I think they're also going to looking to do something big. I don't know what they're going to be able to fit. It's going to be a little tricky with them. You know, they're offering Kravtsov around, like, to see, you know, who's interested in that.
Yeah.
I think the Rangers are – I think these are two – like, look, like, Jim Dolan made a change last year because he was impatient. They're good this year. Their goaltender's been fantastic. He's covering up a lot of mistakes, but, you know, they know the owner's impatient. They'll look at things. I think they already have been.
Mm-hmm. Thought on LA here, who are a better team than we thought. You had a chance to talk to Rob Blake this week. You put that in your 32 Thoughts blog at sportsnet.ca. Have a thought on what the Kings here do now with a little bit of time. We'll end on this one.
I just think that that's the team that's got more staying power than I thought they would. You know, Calgary makes up three games on them in the next month. Edmonton, I think, makes up four.
Mm-hmm.
They think they can make the playoffs. They just had a great road trip. They won 4 out of 6 and got points in the other two. He's going after a left-hand D, and he's going after a score.
Perfect. And the sound of the beeping means your pizza pops are ready. So we'll let you get to
that. That's Steph. That's not me this time. I can't. I was paying attention this one.
Steph made pizza rolls. Awesome, buddy. Go enjoy.
It's banana cake.